Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this, at True Voice with Dr. Fred.
All right.
All right. What's going on, man?
Man,
lots to catch up on.
It's crazy out here, my man. It's just wild. And, you know, it's really interesting is that it's really not crazy. It's just, you know, the pace of life goes through all these shifting dipsy doodles, you know, measured in miles per hour or measures in, you know, measured in events per second or, you know, conversations missed versus conversations had or like opportunities missed versus opportunities had or thought, you know, empowering thoughts versus disempowering thoughts and sharing versus learning versus teaching. It's like, dude,
has there been an AI version of Fred that has taken over yet? Or have you been looking at maybe uploading your consciousness to the cloud so you can be like, there's a quantum Fred that can be in an infinite number of places at the same time, doing infinite number of timelines?
Well, it's a really good question. And, you know, the thing that I feel a little bit caught up on is you're actually talking to one of them.
Tell me more.
Fred's at dinner. Fred's at dinner, bro. Fred's.
I didn't even realize that. Oh, this
yeah,
is.
You're,
this
talking
is,
to a, you're talking to a bot.
Ah, this is the bot version. This is the chat GPT, the biological chat GPT version of Fred here.
Exactly. Yeah. Because tomorrow's Fred's birthday. So he's like, fuck, I'm not doing any fucking podcast tonight. So,
it's that Fred's birthday tomorrow.
Well, it is.
Please, tell him a happy birthday for me.
Okay. Just did that. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're connected like that. It takes 1/30th of a second.
So it's 65. Is that how old he's turning tomorrow?
65, dude.
65. All right.
Yeah. What is that? Soixante-cinq.
Oh, we're speaking Francais here, are we?
No. And you know what's so funny is Fred, he doesn't even know French. It's so funny.
Right. Like, you just download this version. Just downloaded this from the cloud.
I did.
Oh, wow.
Fred's like, what, bro?
You know, that's like, impressive.
Yes. That's the thing. I know way more than he does because I ask the right questions.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
That's all you have to do. Apparently, that's the trick. The trick of this new thing, it has nothing to do with the answers or what you show up with or your memory or experience. It has everything to do. Have you heard this? Like the trick, like, you know, what you got to show up with? The right questions. You know, that's what's here. It's the right question. Got to always ask the right questions.
So speaking of asking the right questions,
how's my sound, by the way? Is it okay or am I cutting in and out?
You had a brief moment where it just kind of froze up there for a moment, but right. You're okay.
Let me see. I can do a little better than that. All right. Keep going.
I think you're all right. I think you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to ask TJ that actually. Oh yeah, admit. Look at that. Look, there's another Fred here.
No, this is the real Fred. He's showing.
There's a real Fred coming online. Okay, yeah. So he's going to join us too. Yeah. All right, fabulous.
What's up, guy? What the hell's
Fred
up?
Real Fred,
you know, you can't even trust a fucking bot anymore.
Seriously.
I'm trying to have a fucking dinner. I get some tweak from a bot that he's having trouble with his sound. Yeah. I got to leave my dinner and come on a fucking podcast. I told the guy, could he just 1 fucking hour is what I asked them to cover me for, Sam. What time is it? It's 6:07. It's 6:10. I understand he was also late because he had to come forth or something.
He was already glitching on you. He didn't even know what coming forth meant. He was in the shower when he was told he needed to come forth.
Can you fire a bot?
I think you can. I think there's multiple replicas that you can make. I think you can just keep replicating them ad infinitum. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, TJ seems to think you can delete its code. I'm not sure you can do that. I think maybe these things have their own. They're going to have their own sentient intelligence. They're going to
regenerate codes
pretty soon.
Yeah, regenerative codes.
Let me ask you a question. If you were to do an upgrade to the Fred bot that was beyond what the human Fred could mm-hmm. what would be the first upgrade? Firmware upgrade.
Fifth. He'd come fifth.
Oh, he'd come fifth. Okay.
I mean, that's obvious. He'd be able to come fifth.
But yeah, serious question. What would be the first three upgrades that you would give the new bot?
The first upgrade would be that he woke up in the morning unmiserable.
Okay.
He could wake up at least into neutrality, or if like the waking up in the morning thing would be totally taken care of.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That just doesn't work. The old Fred, he just has not entirely old mastered Fred
struggles
that
with that, huh?
Every so often. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second one would be, or let's see now. Yeah, this is upgrading the bot. I think the second one would be,
you can do anything. This anything goes, man.
I think it would be talking square to doctors, like really bringing the truth that I know that doctors like. I have absorbed so much doctor experience in my life, and I know what I know about what it means to be a doctor in nearly all specialties. And I've pretended to stay in my psychiatric cocoon, but really I've been watching doctors very closely for many decades. And, you know, these guys did not go into the field to become who they now have become. And they've gone through massive trauma to get to where they are, even if they pretend to be doing fairly well, because that's what the field asks them to do. Like, I would let them know that I see them. I would, and I guess I am going to do that, but I would already have it that I'd be coming forth letting them know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The third thing is, I think I would, I find another way to manage like anxiety and fear that was productive rather than eating or quitting or, you know, becoming despondent, or, you know, taking drugs. Like, you know, sometimes I do that, like, you know, whether it's coffee or some of the other recreational, like I would find a way to transmute. I saw Tony do this week so many times, you know, like when he gets a little bit agitated, when someone agitates him in a crowd or something.
And we're talking about Tony Robbins. If there does happen to be any audience to this, a little backstory to who you're speaking of. Let's clarify that a little bit. You just spent the week in person with Tony Robbins.
That's no small thing.
You want to fill us in before you go on?
Yeah, sure. So I was at the Platinum event in Sun Valley, Idaho, with Tony Robbins leading it. And there's 21 guest speakers over the week talking about the future of society and, you know, not only simply like how and where to invest, but what it really means to be wealthy. What does it really mean to be human? What's really coming around the pike that's either a threat or a illusion? Or, you know, how can we step into the future of this world making a difference? whether or not the world goes upside down, you know, be prosperous in, as defined by the greater contribution that we can give to the world. And, you know, I've really just been, it's been like drinking out of a fire hose with some, you know, world-class specialists in their field, like extraordinarily intelligent people, extraordinarily wealthy people, extraordinarily famous people, people who are being counted on to pave the way for whatever's coming around the corner. And like staying awake and alert. And even if I didn't understand what they were saying, in some cases, it was a challenge. But in the end, as I walk away, I'm so much more informed about many, many things. And I feel like I have a family of these other 476 people who were there with Tony and the 21 speakers, you know, doing exercises, taking notes, and figuring out, like, or at least not even figuring out, like becoming who we're, a greater version of ourselves. So back to what I'm saying about Tony, every so often, like he would say, okay, who didn't get what I just said? And then, you know, three little measly hands would come up in the crowd, like, I didn't get it. And then someone, he'd walk right over to him and say, okay, tell me what you didn't get. And then they would inevitably stand up and say something entirely lame. And Tony's just not that great with lameness. I mean, he's not accepting. He's not willing to let you be lame and then just like go walk to the next guest. That isn't what he does. Instead, he incorporates your lameness and kind of shows you what you're doing in pretending to be lame. And he gets fired up in a way, and then he transmutes and like alchemizes that intensity so that he steps his game up. It's like fuel for him being way better than ever when he's dealing with this person that has seemingly potentially upset him for being a douche, you know, or for being a self-destructive, self-sabotaging person. Like he doesn't want that. But when people do that, and you can almost see him, you know, wanting to slap them around, he instead like alchemizes it through love. That's what I see. It's through this just a really grand definition of love, like a love vessel, and then starts speaking and becoming this amazing, amazing human being that just sets the fucking thing straight so that the person literally sits down, not like beaten up, but absolutely like transformed. It's quite something. I would love that. I would love Fred to have that in place.
It's okay, really, so that's really part of what the new Fred bot gets.
Yeah, for sure.
You get this skill set of being able to take irritation, experience it, internalize it, and then use it as a catalyst for up-leveling your own game.
Exactly.
Versus reacting to the irritation.
Exactly. Beautifully said.
All right. So that's the Fred 2.0. We're working on Fred 2.0 here. I love it.
Yeah. Now, can I ask you what you would do with yours?
I'd get my dick back first. Probably. That's probably the first thing I would do.
Well, that's so much, you know, we share, because that's what Come Fifth is all about, too. So we're we're really on the same page there. That's your just.
No, I mean, it would be silly of me not to take one of those three options and not, you know, become, you know, more able-bodied again. I mean, I don't mind this whole paraplegia thing, and I'm resolved to deal with it to the best of my ability for whatever length of biological time I have here. But I certainly wouldn't complain about being able to have an able-bodied version of this consciousness. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially after all that I've been through, I think I'd be pretty rocking if you took away these limitations and, you know, given how much mental tenacity and resilience I've had to develop as a result of the past 24 years of paralysis, I think I'd be And I'd be, you know, I'm already doing pretty damn well, but I think,
you know, a lot of people have analysis paralysis, and you actually have paralysis analysis.
There you go.
That's what you got.
There you go. Yeah. That's what I've got. Paralysis analysis. So the other thing I think I would do is I would give this bot the ability to sort of outsource a lot of its a lot of Sam's tasks that take up time that are not moving the needle forward in Sam's life. And and so that would be like, I was just noticing today, you know, I was downloading some software or some shit like that, or, you know, working with setting up my password protector on another system or whatever. Like, geez, to think the number of hours that I spend doing menial tasks for my business that do not add any value to the world simply because computers happen to still be complex. And even though I'm not a computer idiot, I'm by no means a computer genius, still these things take time. Everything takes time. And it takes attention. More importantly, it takes attention. And every decision that we need to make takes some of that bandwidth that we could otherwise be applying for other things to other things. So I think the Chat GPT version of, or whatever it is, the bot version of me, this the clone, if you will, the upgrade would be an ability to have basically two brains, one that's able to work on all of the menial tasks while the other one is actually moving the needle forward in more meaningful ways. And so that's the other upgrade. And then number three. Parallel thinking. TJ just got it right. That's right. Parallel thinking processor. Yeah, I want two processors. I love TJ's little comments here. It's great.
Exactly. Yeah, he's very helpful. Parallel thinking.
The other one, let's see, what would be the other upgrade that I would make to Sam? Just the most killer guitar playing skills ever. I think that would have to be it.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Thank you for that, and I'm sure the audience still filing in to the auditorium. Some of you are just arriving late.
Oh, but, yeah.
You haven't missed that much. Just take a seat, if you will, that people behind you can't see if you're going to keep standing up. And if you can just sit down and take off your coat and don't be disruptive as you arrive late. It would be really good if next time you arrived on time or at least 5 or 10 minutes early. Sometimes it's not so easy to find a seat. So, those, you know, like plan for that and get your snacks, get your bathroom out of the way. I've had a lot of complaints from a lot of our listeners that, there's just too much disruption with the crowd. And maybe what we need to do is start doing it out of stadiums like Wembley.
Yeah.
You know, like really go for this thing.
Indeed.
Let's talk a little bit about this guitar thing. I had an opportunity to talk to you yesterday about guitar, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our Hendrix conversation. And without really speaking too much from my end, I'd love to hear a little bit, for the crowd again. Could you quiet down in the back, if you would? Quiet down in the back. Not everyone can hear it from the back. Damn, Sam. Who invited these people? You know, what we should do is charge for tickets, and then that's people would actually respect the place.
That's right. That's right.
God. All right. Okay. Yeah. I'll speak up. Thank you. Thank you for that. Sam, I'd like to talk for you to talk a little bit about what your experience was with this Jimi Hendrix thing that you came up with in the last day or two. And, you know, you sent me a riff. that was certainly Hendrix-esque, if not even post-Hendrix-esque. I'd love for you to talk, you know, you've had some time to think about this a little bit, about what really happened there or what's going on or where you're developing that particular frontier in your, you know, in your guitar materium. Let me know a little bit and let us know. And if you can speak loud enough for the people in the back to hear you, I think that would be great.
Yeah. I was, you know, I was just exploring some riffs last night for those who, oh, like everyone, for those, anyone who happens to be listening. So I've been playing guitar for 36 years, I guess, which is very strange to think that I've actually been playing guitar time-wise in terms of linear time 9 years longer than Jimi Hendrix was even alive. That is mm-hmm. such a strange thing to even consider. So yes, so I've been playing for 36 years, and I love playing Hendrix, but I also love coming up with music that is inspired by my favorite artists, but that's uniquely my own stuff. And last night I was playing some guitar riffs with a sound that was very similar to the sound that he was using in the Band of Gypsies album, particularly on Machine Gun. And I was starting out by playing Machine Gun, and then I started to sort of veer off into new territory. And then I thought, wow, it'd be cool to just come up with a whole lot of new riffs that were kind of like, what would the Hendrix songbook sound like if Hendrix had stayed alive? What would he be doing? What would be the next, some of the next riffs that he would come up with? And this is not something that is, you know, unique to me. Anyone could potentially do this who has any experience with Hendrix's sounds and his sort of his approach. I love this idea of kind of picking up where he left off in a certain way. And I don't say that with any kind of ego, really. It's more just a recognition that Hendrix, his music and his energy was, it emerged out of tapping into a certain frequency of consciousness, a certain sort of field of energy. And that's what, as part of what made Hendrix so special, was he was more of a channel. There were a lot of guitar players at that time, and there has been a lot of guitar players since then, but very few of them are able to act as a channel for something that is truly transcendent, a field of energy that seems to transcend something, normality, reality, seems to come from a different place. There's a transcendent quality to Hendrix's playing. There's a very, I would almost describe it as sort of cosmically erotic mm-hmm. way that Hendrix would play. His mm-hmm. music was kind of like an electric fuck. It mm-hmm. was, and no one had played like that before. Even the movements that he would make with the guitar, you know, he would play and it would look like he was masturbating with the guitar, and he would be gyrating and, you know, moving in such a way. No one was doing that. And hardly anyone has done that since. It was like, it was this full body, full energy, full spirit expression of music where he would just allow his body to be taken over by the muse and just let whatever flow through. And that really, that's also a turn on to me, because mm-hmm. that's a different way of playing than simply taking the instrument and playing in this kind of linear way. It involves different capacities. It involves different sensitivities. And that's part of what has made Hendrix legendary. And so my thesis is, hey, you know, that field of energy is equally available to all if you want to access it. If you have enough of a familiarity with the instrument, and you have enough of a sensitivity and awareness of the field of energy from which he would draw and channel, then you can naturally presume that you can kind of take from that same field and keep creating. And some people might think that what I'm speaking of is blasphemy because they deify Hendrix. But really, Hendrix was just another human being. He wasn't deifying himself. You know, Jesus was a human being with Christ consciousness. He was not trying to deify himself, was not trying to put himself on a pedestal. He was just channeling an energy. In the same way, Hendrix was channeling an energy that is a universal energy, which is why it resonates so broadly.
Mm-hmm. Sam, when we come back from break, I have a piece I'd love to talk to you about, which is, as you speak to this, by the way, your access to the sexuality that the cosmic fuck, or the sexuality that is expressed through the sounds or the presentation of Jimi Hendrix music, is astonishingly on target. Like, we get to see what you see in the world of your description, explanation, or resonance with the whole notion of cosmic fucking, or of the esoteric, like, sexuality that came flying out of that guitar of Jimi Hendrix, and that no one else had ever expressed as such. So when we come back, I'd love for you to speak a little bit to something you said earlier about upgrading your bot, which is this idea of, you know, your first wish. And you sure don't, from here anyways, you don't seem very deficient in the understanding of what pure and cosmic core raw sexuality, sensuality, cosmic fucking really is. So they, whatever they did when they took away the bottom half of your bodily function, they did not get to this thing that you are able to express maybe better than anyone else I've ever heard. So somehow that didn't get scorched in the accident. With that said, I would like to ask you, and this is a conversation that I think could be really great. Let me see if I can put it right. If there was no longer the struggle or the trials and tribulations that you've had from being, limited or comparatively limited physical function over the last half of your life, if that was actually taken away, do you think it's possible that without that struggle going on in the background, things might not be better? You might not be the superstar. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, given what I've been while I was down, imagine what I would be if I was back in my comfort zone. I wonder if that's true, actually, if without that core agitation, if you would continue to soar upward, or would you somehow plateau because you wouldn't be counterbalancing the pain and the pain and tribulation of being physically limited? You know, would you still think that you would soar at the same upward trend? That's the question I have for you.
Is that a question that I'm going to answer now or after the ad break?
No, I say after the, we got to do a commercial. Sam, we got to sell products, because this thing needs, if we don't sell products, our show's going down. So let's sell a product and then we'll come right back. Oh,
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Frey. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So, welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred.
Favorite part of that ad is where the music gets all poppy and screwy at the end there, and it's like what happens in my neurons. It's like when you wake up in the morning and everything is just kind of like, instead of a clear, coherent message that you're getting from it's your brain going,
oh, here we go,
distortion.
TJ actually, he's now given up on the possibility that there's a repair to be had, and he's just writing it off as part of the song.
It's part of the song.
That's so good.
Yeah, man. Let me see. All right. So you wanted to know, would I be the same guy?
Yeah. Do you really think?
Paralysis?
Yeah.
Well, it's always interesting when we explore hypotheticals, and especially hypotheticals when they are as consequential, as potentially consequential as the one that we are exploring. There might be some ways in which certain capacities shift. You know, I think as some capacities come online, other capacities diminish. Without the direct experience of pain, challenge, etc., on a daily basis, I think overall, my sense is that overall that a soul evolves to a point where with the most important stuff sticks around, no matter what the future, what changes in the future, that the
the parts that are really important in terms of what the soul is able to evolve through, I don't think that stuff can sort of diminish. That's at least my sense. I think the most important things that I have sort of cultivated in terms of sensitivities and awarenesses and so forth, my sense is they would probably remain, because I think they're integrated pretty much at a soul level. That's at least my sense.
Let me ask another question along the same lines. Let's say, you know, Hendrix music was without question, so, you know, as the very famous Star Spangled Banner version, or many of his concerts at Monterey or at Woodstock, and others, one could say that he was sort of bridging the gap of the sort of horrible, the terrible aspects, like bridging the gap from the terrible of what it is to be alive to what could, like, somehow the static in between the horrendous aspects of being alive and how it interfaces with what could be, you know, some sort of something that he lands on without giving words to that particular thing. Let's say that during his life, we had some sort of transformation and now everything is just chill. Like, it's all good. Like, it's all good. Like, there's no more trouble. There's no more horrendous. There's no more reason to scream. We're just eating grapes and just hanging out, you know. And, you know, it's like, you know, just like flowers. We're just, you know, no more stormy inner human problems. And are you suggesting that Jimi Hendrix music wouldn't change in that situation?
No, Jimi Hendrix would probably be playing at the Super Bowl, opening up for Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that, actually. He would definitely have been at the Super Bowl. Yeah.
With pyrotechnics and shit.
I wonder if your music, you know, when you play your music, like this last set of licks that you've sent me this week, including Sunshine of Your Love, and then this Hendrix Afterlife stuff, is plastered with emotions, with pain, with suffering, with beauty, with love, with sex, there's something about the discordance of the human condition that comes out in the discordance of your guitar. And if that discordance itself shifted in your external experience of life, the music would no longer come forth.
Yeah, it would be more of a imitative style, or sort of a it might have a sort of a, what's the term that I'm looking for? Nostalgic kind of imitative energy that doesn't necessarily correspond to a real lived experience in the moment. And so I think there's something to that. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, Hendrix, part of what made Hendrix Hendrix was this, this sort of shy and innocent soul who was incredibly sensitive and incredibly certainly believed so deeply in human potential, not in the way that we describe it in terms of accomplishments and that kind of thing, not the sort of human potential movement kind of human potential, but the human potential towards transcendence. He was clearly a strong believer in that. I would say that his music embodies a certain type of tantra in the real sense of the word, where the tantra is really about the marriage of the sensuality, the marriage of the masculine and feminine energies, and the channeling of those energies and creation from those energies. And I think that he was a real tantric master, in a sense, a musical tantric master, who used the power of music to invite people into a transcendent experience. But I think that so much of that was a byproduct of who he was and the time in which he lived, where there was an explosion of possibility that it was emerging as the spiritual awakening of the 60s was taking place, and there was hundreds of years of oppressed energy within the culture that was suddenly cracking open. And there was it was like an open sky and a sunlight shining through, but no one knew how to access that state of transcendent connection. But he was feeling it, he was aware of it, and he brought it through with his playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. We have an inside track, of course, of a mutual friend who really knew him intimately, and his kindness. And there's occasional films that show him to be that, but his sort of kindness, his delicate nature, his sweetness, his manners were like soft, and it's almost like he, upon being able to shit out or come out or scream out or express out all the static discordances, probably there's no one who's more at least in my ears, my relatively like beginner ear is, I don't think there's another musician who is simultaneously more beautifully melodic and discordant at the exact same time.
Yeah. Well, I feel like he was in a certain way the first rock and roll musician to get so incredibly real about what he was putting out. It cut through all of the bullshit. Whereas there are artists before who were clearly performing for the sake of performing because it was fun and it was somewhat imitative. And they were talking about things like love. Oh, love, love, love me do. And this sort of romance and they were playing in a way that was performative, entertaining. They knew they were there to entertain. And he wasn't not there to entertain. He was there to entertain for sure. And he was there to perform more than anyone was there to perform. He was going to perform on another level and entertain on another level. But he also wanted to, it wasn't so much about as sort of romance and fun and rebellion. It was about, let me tear open my rib cage, pull my heart out of me and offer it to you to feed on. That level of shamanic connection that he was offering, that he was inviting his audience to participate in. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Monterey 1967, when at one point he's just so in it, he's probably just tripping his balls off on acid, And he says, I just wish that I could just go out there and just hug and kiss every single one of you. Now, he wants to do that. He's looking for the deepest form of intimacy that he possibly can create. It's like there isn't enough intimacy. He's got far more than he feels that he is able to share. He wants to be as intimate as he possibly can. And so instead of hugging and kissing everyone out in the audience because he can't do that, instead I'm going to sacrifice something I really love. And that's when he burned his guitar. And he had that experience where it looked like he was having an orgasm on top of his guitar, because it was his way of saying, I love you so much that I'm willing to sacrifice this beautiful instrument in front of you as a display of how much I love you. Mm-hmm. And that's next level shit. I mean, that's, you know, it's like The Who had been on right before him, and hey, The Who's awesome. They're amazing and they're rebellious and they're fun. And they're doing all kinds of fun stuff. But when they like knocked over their instruments and smashed their instruments and Keith Moon kicked over his drum set, it was purely for fun and entertainment. He was expressing something different. He was expressing something from a shamanic landscape, not an entertainment landscape, but a shamanic landscape.
So let's see if we can last you a lesson here. So is there like why, if he's way the hell out there, so far beyond, you know, so far beyond anything that had preceded him, and, you know, cutting new teeth and his capacity to use the guitar to express things that never before had been expressed using any instrument, why is it that we as humanity are so turned on by him? What about what, like, why is the outs? What part, why does he touch us? If I've never been, like, what is he expressing that is in fact in all of us? Or in, like, I've played Hendrix for people who otherwise don't even, who claim not to even care about rock and roll. And it doesn't matter, man. You just, you completely appreciate everything he's ever done. Everything. There's no like Hendrix songs that aren't good. Like, you know, like, sorry, that doesn't cut it. Like all pieces of Hendrix music. So what is it about him in shamanic levels that actually somehow in a way, by going where no human had gone before him, unites humanity at the same time in its self-expression? Can you see that it sort of shadows into all?
I think his music, his energy and his music represented it gave people, at least this is how I see it, it gave people an experience of the transcendent, something that was a possibility for something beyond the human experience, where for centuries, people had been getting sort of lip service around this notion of heaven and the divine and the afterlife, the promise of a heavenly domain one after they die. But this is something where the hardly anyone, especially in the Western world at that time, had ever had any experience that was truly transcendent, where it was a true experience of heaven on earth. Most people, culturally, civilization was a bunch of cogs and a wheel, based in puritanical values for the most part, who were the notion of transcendence was something that maybe one would have a brief 2 second experience of it during an orgasm or something and feel like, oh my God, that was otherworldly. Oh, wow. You know, that was as close as you could ever come to heaven on earth in that vibrational way. And I think that Hendrix gave people a doorway into the vibrational possibilities that heaven can and does exist on the earth plane if you look for it. and if you listen for it. That's my Amazing. Sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's who knew that this was going to be a tribute to the Jimi Hendrix that we, you know, that and really just continues to be for those people out there of Jimi, you know, everyone knows that Jimi Hendrix at least was a musician, and most of us have heard, and then some of our audience, especially audience who ever visit us at least two times, more than likely love Hendrix. There's some aspect, which is most of the crowd, Sam. I mean, once you get hooked on this podcast, you can't.
Oh, you never look back. Every Tuesday evening, yeah. you tell your kids to go fuck themselves. You're not going to spend any time at dinner time with them. No way. Wife and kids can all wait. Gonna listen to Sam and Fred.
Exactly. Exactly. Sam, where can people find you? Let's those folks, you know, folks who are just coming in on the word of mouth that they needed to be here. Where can they find you?
Sam@zenwarriortraining.com.
Sam@zenwarriortraining.com. It's a good place to find you. You're up to such great stuff. I invite anyone to really check you out. And there's so many things that you're doing great for the world, Sam. Really, really appreciate you and appreciate your impact on the world and on me for sure. Sam Morris is my partner in this podcast. And, you know, God was kind of the two of us. You know, we were kind of walking around. I was anyway, kind of not knowing that there could be a friend at the level that Sam Morris had showed up for the last few years for me. And I just deeply thank God and Sam for being that man, kind of giving re-injected a purpose into my life. So I truly appreciate it.
Wayward and seekers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's it for today. I think we're going to call it a day. I missed an Instagram live right before this. Like there were some people waiting for me and shit. And I'm like, oh, so I told them I could meet them at
You're
the top
so
of the hour.
Popular, Fred.
I know it's getting a little crazy. That's why I have four or five people watching my calendar now. It's just getting overwhelming. It's just getting overwhelming.
I'll just ask you.
That's what bots are
ask
for.
Ask the bot to try again.
That's what bots are for, bro. You can be three, four, five different places at the same time with a clone. And all we do, we meet twice a week and we discuss where we've been and, you know, who's been where and try to keep it straight. And so that's what bots are for. That's for me, that's the best part of AI is being in four or five different podcasts on the same exact time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Love it.
All right. And TJ, as always, you've been brilliant. Thank you for taking care of us. And you can find me at Dr. Fred at welcometohumanity.net. Or if you want to link tree me, it's, LINKTR and then .EE because they couldn't get the URL apparently. So they actually went with LINKTR.EE, whatever, / Fred Moss. That's a good place to look for me. Folks, thanks so much, Sam. I love you, TJ. Thanks. And we'll catch you on the flip side. Bye for now. From
Cheers.
True Boys. Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?